This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me once again for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories. We begin this week with Sherlock Holmes and the Hangman and the Book, one of his episodes from 1949. After that, it's Dragnet and the Big Confession, their episode from March 30th, 1954.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men, and more than 1,200 leading retail stores from coast to coast, presents Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's immortal character, the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, starring John Stanley. This week's story, The Adventure of the Hangman and the Book.
It's rather chilly out here in the park, eh, Holmes? Good thing the gendarmes brought along torches. It's terribly dark.
This way, Watson. Follow the inspector.
There, Monsieur Holmes. Just before you. In the torchlight.
Aha. The dead body. Hung from the limb of the tree. And dancing grotesquely in the wind.
Not every man has the broad shoulders and slim, tapering waist of an athlete, but it's a fact that men who wear Clippercraft suits look like they do. That's the result of careful Clippercraft styling, of design that emphasizes good points and minimizes bad ones. You don't ordinarily find such styling in $45 suits, but a Clippercraft worsted suit at only $45 gives you styling plus expert workmanship and fine quality materials. It's the same with Clippercraft topcoats at from $40 to $47.50. Clippercraft clothes actually look like they cost much more, and they would, except for the fact that over 1,200 established independent local merchants pool their tremendous buying power to get them for you at such low prices. Compare Clippercraft clothes yourself. Put on a Clippercraft suit and a Clippercraft topcoat and see how good you feel. Your friends will all say, "Gee, but you're looking swell." And you will be. Now, Dr. Watson, we await our rendezvous with the adventure of the hangman and the book.
It was at the turn of the century, Mr. Harris. The enormous pressure of work upon Holmes had become too much for him. He suggested we steal away to Paris for a week of relaxation. Holmes and I were in Paris at our hotel when this criminal began his operations. It was at the Bontemps bookstore, a world-famous Parisian shop noted for its collection of rare works. In the cellar beneath the shop was a thin, drawn, nervous young chap, Albert the Clerk. He was poking about the bookshelves with a candle in his hand. Then suddenly, he heard footsteps. He looked up, terribly frightened.
Who is it? Who's going down?
I am, Albert.
Oh, Monsieur Bontemps.
I forbid you to come into the cellar.
Yes, you did. I had to know the secret. I had to know what you kept down here.
I ought to thrash you, snooping about when I forbade it. I told you I did not want anyone in the cellar. I won't allow my own wife. I won't allow the least down here. Let alone a miserable, sniveling clerk. How long have you been here?
Just a few minutes.
Long enough to look about, eh? To see what I keep here.
No. I'm terribly sorry. My curiosity got the best of me. I'll never do it again. You won't punish me, Monsieur Bontemps?
We shall see what I'll do about you, Albert. We shall see.
Is the shop closed, Marcel?
Yes, Alice, darling. Going out again for the evening?
I am.
You have left me here alone every night this week.
Don't be tiresome. You know I'm bored to distraction when I'm home with you.
Then I'll go out with you. I'll take you wherever you wish.
Marcel, we've gone over this so many times. Help me find my jade earrings like a dear, won't you?
You're staying home tonight, Alice.
Oh, stop pawing me. Let me alone.
I am so loathsome to you.
Yes. Yes, you know you are. You never did attract me, you know that. I told you before I married you for prestige and financial purposes. You accepted that. Now you insist upon being as romantic as a schoolboy.
Stop it. I don't want to hear that. I can't stand that.
You insist upon forgetting that you are more than 20 years older than I am, Marcel. You refuse to face that. You're old and withered and repulsive.
Albert, my Clark, is more appealing to you, isn't he?
Oh, nonsense. Where did you get that notion?
Don't lie to me. I've seen you together. After you thought I left the store, I saw you take him upstairs to the apartment.
Just to chat.
Oh, really?
Get out of my way, Marcel. I'm late. Go downstairs, to the cellar. To whatever fantastic secret down there intrigues you so.
If you go out again tonight, Alice, I'll put an end to it. I won't be disgraced and thrown aside this way. I've some pride, although you've used every device on earth to destroy it.
Let's not quarrel, dearest. Here, here's a kiss for you. Now, help me find my earrings, won't you?
All right, Alice. Anything you say.
Alice, wait.
Yes, Albert.
I ran after you to ask if I'll see you tonight, Alice. I waited for you at the cafe last night, but you never came.
I shan't see you anymore, Albert. Except at the shop, of course. On business.
You what?
Marcel knows about us. We must stop.
But you can't just dismiss it.
Oh, yes, I can.
I risked my job because of you. I risked Marcel dragging me to court, possibly putting a knife into me.
We've had some rather pleasant times together, Albert. Now suppose we forget them. You're capable of that.
Oh, you're going out with another man, aren't you?
That does not concern you. Let go of my cape. Go back to the store. Marcel will be upset.
Do you think you'll ever come to the end of it, Alice? Do you think you can go on forever like this?
Albert, call me a carriage like an angel.
You wouldn't be very attractive to other men, Alice, lying in the morgue with your neck broken.
Well, there, that's impetuous. That's very, very foolish. Go on, sweet. Call me a carriage. Who is there? I saw you behind that tree. I know you've been following me through this park. If you don't stop, I shall call a gendarme. I said I know you are behind that tree. I can see your silhouette. Oh, so you will show me who you are. I might have known it would be you. What are you doing with that rope? You've made a hangman's noose of it.
Of the Sûreté, the French police. We are delighted to have you with us in Paris, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, Inspector.
Your accommodations here at the hotel are satisfactory?
Quite.
We're very comfortable, Inspector. Enjoying our visit immensely.
Superb, Dr. Watson. I am happy you have relaxed, Mr. Holmes, because, 1,000 apologies, the relaxation is over.
Precisely what do you mean, Inspector?
Just a few moments ago, a gendarme discovered the body of a woman hanging in the Tuileries. She had been hung to a tree by a rope.
Routine police matter.
Ordinarily, Monsieur Holmes, yes. However, the case is most extraordinary. The woman was the wife of Marcel Boutin, the distinguished owner of the Boutin bookshop.
Really? I know Marcel. Remarkable shop, one of the best. Marcel and I correspond frequently.
Monsieur Holmes, the journalist will create a great crisis over the death of Madame Boutin. I must find the killer immediately. I need your help, monsieur.
Have you questioned Marcel, her husband?
Well, as best we could. He is grief-stricken.
Where's the body?
Well, I have closed the Tuileries, Dr. Watson. I have ordered that the body be left, hanging from the limb, exactly as it was found. It awaits your arrival, Monsieur Holmes.
Very wise, Inspector.
Oh, then You will help us move toward the solution?
I will arrive at the solution, my dear Inspector. Watson, a cab. The Tuileries.
Well, it's rather chilly out here in the park, eh, Holmes? Glad the gendarmes brought torches, too. It's terribly dark.
Yes.
This way, Monsieur Holmes. you may see the guard we have stationed about that huge tree. Set. And there, in the torchlight...
Swaying from the limb of the tree, the body of Alice Bonton.
Horrifying sight.
Let's have a closer look, shall we? Inspector, has Marcel, this dead woman's husband, any notion as to how this occurred?
Oh, he is too ill. He is prostrate. It will be a few days before we can question him thoroughly.
What is it, Holmes? What do you see?
I see, my dear Watson, that I must pay a visit to Monsieur Charles Guillaume, the eminent French publisher.
Yes, what on earth does he have to do with this grisly crime?
More than he would imagine. In the obscure records of that publisher, there's a forgotten entry which contains a clue as to who is responsible for this homicide. That entry speaks the name of the criminal, just as if this dead body before us were whispering it too. Whispering the killer's name as it executes a macabre dance in the moonlight.
It's pleasant to shop in your local Clippercraft store, wherever you live, because your Clippercraft merchant is an established, substantial hometown businessman who is anxious to win and keep your friendship. To please you and give you more value for your money, he has joined with over 1,200 outstanding merchants in a vast pool of buying power to make Clippercraft values possible. Clippercraft genuine worsted suits for $45 and Clippercraft top coats for $40 to $47.50 would not otherwise be possible. For Clippercraft quality is the traditional quality of New England, the same careful craftsmanship that built the famous Yankee Clippers, from which Clippercraft clothes take their name. You can trust Clippercraft clothes, and you can trust the men who sell them. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes bearing the Clippercraft label. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits and topcoats. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge, Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Now, Dr. Watson, shall we return to the adventure of the hangman and the book?
Well, Mr. Harris, after Holmes examined the body of Alice Bonton in the Tuileries, he noticed a small detail he would not disclose. Next morning, he dashed to the offices of Monsieur Guillaume, the publisher. He returned with a Cheshire cat's grin that indicated he was close to his prey. Then sometime later, we visited Monsieur Bonton at his bookshop. The shop was dismal, dilapidated. Funereal. Indeed, a frightening place. Monsieur Bonton came to us.
Monsieur Holmes, I am honored.
I hardly expected to see you on this trip, Marcel. You know Dr. Watson?
You have mentioned him to me frequently. Delighted.
How do you know?
You have heard of my tragedy.
Yes, Marcel. Could you recount what occurred the evening of your wife's demise?
She left me here to visit someone. Seemed untroubled, so I allowed her to leave and did not escort her to where she was going. Evidently, on her way home late that night, she chose to walk through the park, the Tuileries, alone. I would say she was attacked by a night prowler. She resisted him and did away with her. I was awakened by a gendarme who brought the terrible news. You have a theory, perhaps, Monsieur Holmes?
Perhaps. I see you still have a magnificent collection of books.
Oui, certainement.
Is this your entire stock here in the shop?
Yes. Our apartment is upstairs, our books here.
And below the shop?
The cellar is locked, Monsieur Holmes. We have not been to the cellar in many years.
Anyone work for you here, Monsieur Bonton?
My employer clerk, Albert.
Where is he?
That is a problem. He did not report for work these past 2 days.
Were your relations with Albert on a pleasant basis?
Not entirely.
How long has he been in your employ, sir?
Oh, approximately a month.
What trouble have you had?
I do not like to place the young boy in a bad light, but I have reason to believe he was more than fond of my wife, Alice.
I see. A chat with Albert, then, might be very enlightening.
Please, Monsieur Holmes, I am not accusing the poor clerk.
You have his address?
27 Rue Cerise. Albert Joliot.
Come, Watson.
To talk with the boy?
Yes. Perhaps this romantic young clerk, in his leisure moments, is a hangman.
Well, Holmes, what's our next step? His landlady said the clerk Albert hasn't been home for a few days.
We shall return to the Bonton bookshop, Watson.
Yes, we've been there.
Oh, we shall return much later this evening. Midnight, I should say. When the owner has left, we shall again visit the mysterious bookshop.
But, Holmes, you looked at it.
There is one spot we did not see. By far the most interesting, too.
What spot is that?
When I inquired about it, Bonton turned white. He trembled.
What spot, Holmes?
The cellar, Watson. We shall pay a midnight visit to the cellar.
The door to Bonton's cellar, Holmes. It'll be locked, of course.
That is why I brought a few instruments with me, Watson. Of course, the lock. Childishly simple for me. I've made an extensive study of continental locks.
Well, here we are. Now...
Quietly, Watson. I shall work at the cellar door. You keep an eye out.
Yes, as you are.
Shouldn't take but a moment. See anyone? Hear anyone?
No. All clear. Go on.
Simple lock. Just another moment.
I hear someone, Holmes, coming down the street.
I must finish.
Hurry, Holmes, you'll be seen.
One more second. There we are.
Good.
Quickly, the door.
Yes.
Follow me. Be careful. Rickety wooden steps.
Right-o.
Match, Watson. Light the candle we brought.
Yes, certainly. Holmes, what do you expect to find down here? Good Lord. I've never seen so foul and musty a place. You see the rats?
The answer is here, Watson. The answer must be here.
Yes, but what sort of shocking secret lies in this cellar?
I'm looking for it. Looking for it.
Well, what? Listen. Someone's down here.
That direction, Watson. Left. Bring the candle.
I am not afraid of the dark, Mama. But why is it dark at night? Tell me, why it is so dark at night, Mama?
It's the clerk, Albert. I know him from his landlady's description. He's been tied up, Holmes. Look, he's bound to that pillar there.
Yes, so he has, and apparently he's gone insane.
Yes, by Jove, yes, look over his head. Isn't that a form of ancient torture?
It is, the water method. Accomplished in this case with a large pitcher and a funnel, which is replenished now and then by his captor. Albert was bound to that pillar, but a steady drip of water strikes his head and he's gone mad. Tortured also by the darkness, by hunger and thirst, and the huge rats against which he's been defenseless. Untie him, Watson.
Yes, of course. Just 1 minute.
The water. The water.
There we are.
The water doesn't stop, you see. Only your mind stops. Rats are cruel animals. Perhaps not as cruel as men. They enjoy human flesh.
He must be rushed to a hospital. Maybe years before his sanity is restored. A pillar.
The water is a colorless compound of hydrogen and oxygen. It is very helpful to man. It is beautiful. In the form of mighty oceans, lakes, and rushing rivers. It has many uses. All of them essential to life.
Where are you going, Holmes? What are you looking for?
Ah, there we are, this shelf.
What is it?
A book, faded to illegibility in parts, very dusty.
A book?
The book, Watson. Though not outstanding in this surprising collection, I see.
You mean you originally stole into the cellar simply to find that book?
Yes. Now we must find Marcel Bonton immediately.
I will spare you the effort, monsieur.
Not very hospitable of you, Marcel, to greet us with a pistol.
I'm familiar with your reputation, monsieur. I realized you would become suspicious, so I've been waiting for you with this pistol, which I shall use.
You have come to put more water in the pitcher of my head, Monsieur Bonton! Please, no more water!
May I ask, Monsieur Holmes, what book intrigues you so?
This work in my hand is entitled Rare Techniques in Homicide. It includes an exact reproduction of a Persian manuscript written in the time of Darius I. The subject of it? Techniques of torture and murder used during the Peloponnesian Wars.
Holmes, why that book?
When I observed Marcel's wife hung to the limb of the tree, Watson, I noticed she'd been tied with a special knot. I recognized it immediately. It was the very peculiar knot for garrotting described in the Persian manuscript. There was just one place on earth where that knot is described. In this book. I knew there were just two copies of this work left in the world.
I see you have one at Baker Street, I dare say.
Of course. I therefore asked Guillaume, the publisher, an expert bibliophile, where the other copy was.
He told you I had it there, Monsieur Holmes?
Yes, he did. Therefore, I paid you a visit to look for it. I found it, Monsieur Bontemps.
That, unfortunately, does not prove that I hung Alice.
Why not?
Because Albert, my clerk, gibbering there in the corner, could have read it too. He has been to the cellar before. I found him here prior to the night of the murder.
Yes, Marcel, when I saw the knot, I immediately realized the killer must either have been you or Albert, your clerk. But Albert could never have read this book and learned to tie the fatal knot.
Why not? He was here. He had access to it.
Observe the book, sir. It's faded to the point of being illegible.
He still might have read it before it's faded.
Could he? Call upon your excellent knowledge of printing, sir. Has it not been at least a year since this type was legible? Look at the pile of dust accumulated upon this book. Has it not been at least a year since the book was touched at all? And did you not say to me yourself that you've employed Albert for only a month?
Remarkable, Holmes.
Marcel, you executed the contents of the book to the letter. The book relates that the ancient punishment for adultery was physical death for the wife. So you murdered Alice. And the punishment for the lover was more subtle. It was mental death. Torture to the point of insanity. So you pounced upon Albert, tied him to that post in this cellar, and arranged your diabolical water pitcher. Yes, you've been deeply affected by this amazing collection of books.
You see before you, gentlemen, the great secret of my cellar, which I have concealed all these years. Every book on the subject of crime ever written.
I noticed you've the secret records of Caligula, Torquemada during Inquisition, the bloodstained memoirs of the Borgia.
This was my real world down here. The world upstairs, I shot my wife, I was unhappy there. This began as a hobby, an intellectual pursuit, but then I grew to absorb it, to revel in it.
Yes, I'd say you've become intoxicated with crime.
Time and again I was tempted to try committing a crime. It was always in the back of my mind. Then, when I found Dalit was making a puppet of me, when I found how she hated me, when I found out about her and Albert...
You satisfied your desire and accomplished what you believed was justice by enacting what you read in this strange book.
And now I've a wonderful opportunity to know the satisfaction of committing a great crime, Monsieur Holmes, of killing both of you and then leaving Albert as I plan to rot away in that corner of my cellar in living death. My own memoirs will be a glorious new addition to my collection.
You'll do it, Holmes. He's going to pull that trigger.
My leg.
Are you all right, Monsieur Holmes? Dr. Watson?
Yes, Inspector.
I am coming down. I have Bontemps' gun. Here, Inspector.
Oh, it was very foresighted, Monsieur Holmes, to tell me to come by should you meet Bontemps unexpectedly.
Unexpectedly? My dear Inspector, it's obvious my reputation here on the continent is not what it is throughout the British Empire. You may inform your associates that there is nothing unexpected to Monsieur Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Dr. Watson, that was a very thrilling story indeed.
Well, I'm delighted that you found the adventure so exciting, Mr. Harris. And I do believe that next week's story is just as gripping. It is called The Adventure of the East End Strangler. It concerns a city in terror, a scream in the night, a bit of blue thread, and an old lover.
The makers of Clippercraft clothes and more than 1,200 stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And the program is produced and directed by Basil Lochran. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley. Dr. Watson by George Spelton. This week's story was written by Howard Merrill with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Money can help the fight against heart disease. Send a donation to your local Heart Association campaign or to the American Heart Association, Box 500, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes
in The Adventure of the East End Strangler. This is Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet is brought to you by Chesterfield, made by Liggett and Myers, first major tobacco company to bring you a complete line of quality cigarettes.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A young man walks into your office and tells you he has a problem. From the way he talks, you know it's serious. Your job? Listen. Today, friends, you hear these three words everywhere. Chesterfield's for me. The Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made. Best for you. Because Chesterfield gives you proof of highest quality, low nicotine. The taste you want. The mildness you want. Chesterfield is best for you because it's tested and approved by 30 years of scientific tobacco research. Chesterfield is best for you because it has an established good record with smokers, proven by test after test. Yes, friends, the Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made for the taste you want, the mildness you want. Join the thousands now changing to Chesterfield. Always say, Chesterfield's for me.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, September 8th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Warman. My name's Friday. I was on my way back to the office from R&I, and it was 10:14 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Pardon me, sir.
Yes, sir.
Are you a policeman?
Yes, sir, that's right. What can I do for you?
I want to talk to somebody. I'm not sure who, though.
Well, if you tell me what it's all about, I might be able to help you.
Well, I got to be sure it's the right person. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes, sir.
My name's Paul Marcus.
All right, Mr. Marcus. What is it you want to talk about?
Do you work in there in the homicide department?
That's right.
You know all about murders then, huh?
You want to come into the office and talk?
No, I don't want to go in there. Is there someplace else we can go? I'd like to talk to you alone. This is kind of a personal thing.
All right, sir. Come on down the hall. Interrogation room.
Nobody else there?
No.
Well, that's good, because like I told you, this is a personal matter. I need your advice.
All right, sir, this way.
This is the first time I've ever been in the police department. I feel kind of funny just walking in and talking personal things to a stranger.
Yes, sir, I can understand. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Want to sit down right there?
Thank you.
All right, you want to tell me about it?
You mind closing the door?
All right. Now, what's your problem, Mr. Marcus?
I told you it was personal.
Yes, I know.
I want to be sure I handle it right. I could get in a lot of trouble if I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Been trying to figure out what to do about it for a week now and couldn't find the right answer. That's why I came here. You guys should know.
All right, now, if you'll just tell me what's bothering you, we might be able to do something for you.
Uh-huh. A whole week and no answer. I sure hope you got it for me.
I'm sorry, Mr. Marcus, but if you don't tell me what this is all about, there's nothing we can do.
Well, it's nothing big, just a personal problem. I just want to know how to handle it.
All right, go ahead.
I killed a woman.
Ten:18 a.m. We got the name of the woman Paul Marcus said that he'd murdered. We also obtained a description of the victim, and Frank went down the hall to missing persons to see if a report had been filed on her. I waited with the suspect.
It's a personal problem. You know how to handle it, and I wasn't sure. That's why I came to you.
All right, where did you meet this Lorraine Farrell?
San Francisco.
How long ago?
A couple of weeks. I just knew her a little while before it happened, just a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Fisherman's Wharf.
What's that?
Fisherman's Wharf. That's where I met her in San Francisco. I was on a vacation. 2 weeks with pay, and I went to San Francisco. Fisherman's Wharf. That's where I met Lorraine.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I was down there sitting on the dock looking at the boats, just sitting there eating prawns. You know how they cook them in those great big pots?
Yeah.
Well, I was just sitting there eating prawns and I met her.
Well, where'd you kill her?
Look, you got to let me tell this in my own way or I'm not going to tell you at all. It's got to be right so you'll understand. Now, if you don't get it right, the whole thing's gone wrong. You see, it's a real personal thing.
All right, sir, go ahead.
Well, I was just sitting there eating prawns, eating them and throwing the little tail pieces down in the water. You know how you do.
Mm-hmm.
Watching them kind of float around. Kind of all of a sudden, she was right there sitting just alongside of me.
You ever see her before?
I never laid eyes on her till then.
All right, go ahead.
Well, we both sat there for a minute, and then we started to talk. Just little things like nice weather and how long you've been in San Francisco, things like that. You know how you do.
How old did you say the feral woman was?
19. Turned 19 the 5th of August.
All right.
She was born there, you know, in San Francisco. She told me about it when we were talking, how she was born there and grew up there.
Yeah.
Told me all about the school she went to, how she used to play on Strawberry Island and Stowe Lake. You ever been there?
Yes, sir.
It's kind of a beautiful place, you know. They got those rowboats, and you paddle around the lake, and right in the middle is this island, Strawberry Island. There's all those swans that swim around. You can feed them. Real beautiful Strawberry Island.
Tell me something, Marcus. You ever been in the hospital?
Huh?
You ever had any mental care? Been under the supervision of a psychiatrist, maybe?
You think I'm crazy, don't you?
No, I'll just ask you a question.
Well, I'm not. I've never been to a doctor. I'm telling you the truth. You'll see.
All right. You want to go ahead?
I guess you get a lot of crackpots in here telling you all kinds of phony stories, huh?
The doors are wide open all night.
I guess you get a lot of them. But I'm not a crackpot. I'm telling you the truth. I did kill her. But it's important you know why I did it. I got to tell you the right way. If I don't, none of it's going to be any good.
When'd you kill her?
September 1st. That's the day we left. September 1st.
That'd be a week ago today, huh?
Yeah, September 1st.
Joe?
Yeah.
See you a minute.
All right. Just a minute, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what do you got?
Well, I checked missing persons.
Yeah.
I got a report on the girl. Same name, description matches.
When'd she disappear?
September 1st.
Well, that fits in with what he told us.
Yeah, but there's something that doesn't.
What's that?
She's 16 years old.
Each year, there are hundreds of citizens who walk into the nearest police station and confess to some sort of crime. Some have actually happened. Others have occurred only in the mind of the person confessing. No matter how wild the confession, how implausible the details of the crime, each report has to be checked out. To doctors, such cases are clinical. But to the working detective, they're the cause of a lot of legwork and a great deal of checking. They cost the taxpayer untold man hours in investigating time and many times result in nothing. Because of his attitude and his reluctance to give us the complete story all at once, it appeared that Paul Marcus might be one of these people. The fact that he named a girl who was missing meant little, since it was possible for him to have read the story in a newspaper. The only way we had of being sure was to continue the interrogation. 10:34 a.m.
She told me she wanted to get away from home. That's what she told me, how it was rough for her there, and she wanted to get away.
Mm-hmm. That's when you said you'd bring her down here, is that right?
Oh, no, I didn't even suggest it. The whole thing was her idea.
She brought it up?
Yes. You see, after that first day on Fisherman's Wharf, I saw her several times. Almost every day, we'd meet someplace and talk.
Where would you meet her?
Well, sometimes in one of the hotel bars. Once we met out at the Steinhardt Aquarium. We met on the rotunda there. You know where they have the big pool and all the alligators swimming around? You know where?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we met there once, and we walked over to the place where they have the band concerts right across the way where the band plays, only they weren't there that day. Wasn't anybody there, just Lorraine and me. We sat on the benches and talked. That's when she said she wanted to go with me.
To Los Angeles, huh?
Yeah. That's where I was going. She wanted me to take her.
She came right out and asked you.
Sure. Told me how it was hard for her at home and she wanted to get away. She told me she had friends here. Said she could stay with them until she got things straightened out. You know, get a job and a place of her own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was going to do that. Get a place of her own and a job, and then she'd be all right.
Did you ever meet her parents?
No, I never went to the house. She told me where it was, though, someplace out by the Twin Peaks Tunnel. I didn't know where exactly. She didn't want me to go out there. Said it would only cause her more trouble. That's why I'd meet her in town.
You ever meet any of her friends up in San Francisco?
Yeah, just once we were in a drugstore on Market Street having a sandwich. We were just sitting there, and she was telling me how it was bad for her at home, and a girl came in. Looked like she was a schoolgirl. You know how I mean? Young?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she came in and talked to Lorraine, then they went over to the phone booths and talked.
You didn't actually meet the girl?
No. No, Lorraine said if I did, the girl might say something to Lorraine's parents, and that would cause trouble.
You know this girl's name?
I think it was Grace. I'm not sure, but I think it was Grace.
When'd you leave San Francisco?
Wednesday morning, September 1st. I want to get back in time to get some rest before I had to go to work. You know, my vacation was up, and I had to go back to work.
Where'd you pick up the girl?
Wasn't a pickup. I was sitting on Fisherman's Wharf, eating prawns and looking at the boats, and we started to talk. Wasn't a pickup. We just got friendly.
No, Marcus, he means that where'd you pick up the girl when you left for Los Angeles?
Oh, I thought you meant when I met her the first time. That's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
I met her out at the tunnel.
Where's that?
Well, you know where Castro Street runs into Market, where the L car comes in from the beach? That's where I met her. She came from home, had her suitcase and all, and she came out on the L car.
All right, go ahead.
Well, she got off the streetcar, got into my car, and we left for Los Angeles.
Where'd you kill her?
I told you before, if I don't tell it my way, it isn't going to work. You're not going to understand. It's got to be my way.
All right, go ahead, Mark.
Well, it was a beautiful day, just the kind of a day you want when you're going on a drive. You know how I mean, clear and the sun shining.
Yeah.
Well, that's what kind of a day it was.
Uh-huh.
You could see all across the bay over to Berkeley and way up north. It was real clear.
You want to go ahead with your story?
Mr. Friday?
Mm-hmm.
My way?
Yes, all right, go ahead.
All right. We drove all day, stopped for lunch at a place near San Luis Obispo, a little lunch stand there. Had a French dip sandwich. It was one of the best I ever had. The meat was real lean, and they didn't sop up the bun with the gravy. Just the right amount. One of the best I ever ate.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine liked them, too. She didn't like the bread all sopped up with gravy.
Go ahead. What happened after you had lunch?
Well, we left there and drove on. We got down to around Malibu. I guess it was really before that, where the divided highway is up the coast. You know where the cliffs are?
Yeah, we know.
Well, we stopped. She was such a beautiful night. I just wanted to sit there and look at the ocean. People don't take time anymore.
What happened then?
We just sat there, had a cigarette, and talked. That's when I told her. First time I ever said it.
What was that?
It's funny. I guess most fellas say it a lot. You know how I mean, to a bunch of girls and never mean it.
Go ahead.
I told her. First time I said I loved her, and I told her that she didn't have to get a job, that I wanted to marry her, get her a house and all, and she wouldn't have no more trouble at home. How she'd have her own home and everything would be all right. I told her all that.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew, right then. You could divide the second in a million parts, and in one of the parts, I knew I had to do it.
Kill her?
Yeah. You see, she didn't tell me the real reason. She lied to me, and I knew I had to do it. So she wouldn't lie to anyone else. You can understand that. You can see why I had to do it.
Well, maybe you better tell us.
Well, it was all a lie, all about the family being mean to her. All that was a lie. She just wanted to get to Los Angeles because she wanted to meet some other fella here. That's why. She lied about the family, and that's why she did it. So you see, I had to kill her. I had to.
How'd you kill her?
Huh?
I say, how did you kill her?
We got out of the car and walked over to the cliffs. We could see right down to the ocean. We just stood there. I just hit her. She fell down. It was quiet. So I pushed her over into the water.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do then, Marcus?
I got in the car and drove home.
You just left her there, huh?
Certainly. There wasn't anything I could do for her.
You point out the place where all this happened?
Well, sure. It's up the coast where the highway's divided, north of Malibu. It's real easy to find.
Anybody else around?
You mean when I hit her?
That's right.
No, we were all alone. I didn't see anybody, just the two of us.
All right, Marcus, you willing to give us a statement on all this?
You mean what I just told you?
Yeah.
Well, sure. You want me to tell all about it again?
We'll call in a stenographer.
So you can write it down, huh?
That's the idea.
Well, sure, I'll tell her.
Tell me something, Marcus. When did you get out of the hospital?
I told you before, I was never in one. You guys sure make it tough, don't you?
What's that?
I came in here because I wanted to tell you about Lorraine. I wanted you to know so you wouldn't think it was my fault, that's all. So you wouldn't think it was my fault, and now you don't believe me. You think I'm just another crackpot trying to sell a phony story. You guys sure make it tough.
We gotta be sure.
Well, I'm telling you the truth. I want you to believe me.
Yeah.
I want you to believe me.
Yeah, we're beginning to. A statement was taken from the suspect, and he was booked in at the main jail on a charge of suspicion of violation of Section 187 PC, murder. We sent a teletype to San Francisco, and we contacted Inspectors Ed Van Der Voort and John O'Hare of Homicide Detail. We filled them in and asked that they check out the suspect's story on their end. We also asked that they send us all available information on the missing girl, and that they check with her family and try to get a list of any known associates that she might have had in the Los Angeles area. Frank and I checked out of the office at 7:48 p.m. and we went home for the night. The following morning at 9:23 a.m., Inspector Van Der Voort from San Francisco called back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When was that, Ed?
Wait a minute.
All right, yeah, I got it. How about friends down here? I say, how about friends down here? Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Well, it should be here this afternoon, then. Right. Yeah, we'll check them out. No, that's on the way. We put it in the mail for you last... Well, you should have it by now, then. Okay, right. Right, Ed, thanks very much. We'll be checking with you. Right. Bye.
How about it?
Well, they checked the family and the friends, the place where Marcus said he stayed up there.
Yeah.
Marcus' story checks out all the way.
listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
One of the biggest comedy hits of the year. That's how the movie critics are describing Bob Hope's latest Paramount picture, Casanova's Big Night. Like so many other millions of smokers, Bob and Audrey Dalton, who appears with him in the picture, say, Chesterfield's for me. First, Audrey Dalton.
I changed to Chesterfield King Size because I think it's better than any other king size cigarette.
Bob Hope says,
5 years, that's how long I've been smoking Chesterfields. And they have what it takes to satisfy me. What's more, I've seen how they make Chesterfields down in their Durham factory. And I wouldn't smoke any other cigarette. Try Chesterfields yourself. You'll find they're best for you, too.
Yes, either way, regular or king size, smoke America's most popular two-way cigarette. Join the thousands now changing to Chesterfield.
In the phone conversation, we learned that all of Lorraine Farrell's friends and relatives had been interviewed and their stories checked with the one given us by the suspect, Marcus. The girl and Paul Marcus had been seen together in the Bay City. The desk clerk at the hotel where the suspect had stayed verified the date that he'd checked out. It was the same day Lorraine Farrell disappeared. The officers in San Francisco were able to contact the girl the suspect had referred to as Grace. She recalled seeing a man answering Marcus' description with a missing Farrell girl. Frank and I spent the rest of the day checking on the suspect. We talked to the people he worked with. They described Marcus as being moody and withdrawn. We talked with his landlady. Her description of the suspect's attitude was the same that we'd gotten before. We thoroughly searched Marcus's apartment, and in a desk drawer, we found a loose-leaf notebook with several pages of penciled notes describing the trip that he'd taken up to San Francisco. On one of the pages, at the back of the book, we found a lengthy letter to a Lorraine in which Marcus apologized to the girl for killing her, but he went on to explain that he had no choice. We booked this evidence. The following morning, Friday, September 10th, Frank and I drove down to the beach and we talked to the people in the vicinity where the suspect said the murder had occurred. We found an elderly couple who lived in a trailer on the beach. They recalled having seen two people answering the description of the suspect and the missing girl on the night that the murder occurred. We drove back to the main jail and we signed out Marcus. We took him down to the car and we drove him out to the beach. We turned up the highway and told him to let us know when we came to the place where he'd killed the Farrell girl.
Sure you know where the place is, Marcus?
Yeah, I remember. It's just up the road a little bit. Just keep right on going. You'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it now. There's kind of a parking place and a couple of trees. Eucalyptus, I think. There's two of them on the side of the parking place. You can't miss them. It's right ahead there on the left. There, you see?
Yeah. I'm gonna pull in, Frank.
Okay. Just look at all those cars. Everybody's in such a hurry, they never see anything, just like they had blinders on.
You sure this is the place?
I told you, didn't I? No reason to say a thing like that if it wasn't true. Just pull right in there. That's it, right over there. Well, right here is where I parked when it happened. Maybe over there a little bit more, but... oh, right about here.
And the two of you just sat here for a few minutes, is that it?
Yeah. We just sat here and had a cigarette, and then we got out of the car and walked over to the edge of the cliff.
All right, come on. Show us.
Sure. So you'll believe me, I'll show you. Now, we stood right over there. Right there, and I told her I was in love with her and wanted to marry her.
Now, you stay here. Just point out where you were.
You think I might try to jump off, don't you? That's what you think, isn't it?
You just show us, huh?
I wouldn't do that. There's no reason to. I don't know why you wouldn't agree that I had to do it. I didn't have any other way to do it.
Where were you when you hit her?
Right there, near that clump of grass. We stood there and looked down at the ocean, and she told me about this other guy. That's when I hit her. She fell down right about there.
Uh-huh. And where'd you push her off the cliff?
There, right where I hit her. She was lying there. I guess she hit her head on something, and she was real quiet. I just rolled her over the edge. It was right there. There, you see where the rocks are kind of worn?
Go and take a look.
Yeah.
No, you wait here.
Gee, if I'd have known it was going to be this hard to get it straightened out, I don't think I'd have started the thing. When am I going to get out of jail?
That isn't up to us.
Well, then I want to talk to the people who it's up to. I got to tell them about Lorraine, how she lied to me and why I had to kill her. As soon as they hear the story, they'll understand. They got to realize that there wasn't any other way.
How's it look?
Well, I found this caught in a branch just over the edge.
Yeah.
It's a girl's handkerchief. Read the name on it.
Yeah. Lorraine. Friday, September 10th, 3:46 p.m. We contacted the crime lab and asked them to come out and go over the scene. Officers stood by so that any physical evidence would not be disturbed until Lieutenant Lee Jones and his men had an opportunity to go over it. Frank and I, along with the suspect, drove back to town where we made arrangements with the city lifeguard service to search for the body. The following morning, a boat equipped with diving gear left Santa Monica Harbor and took a course north. Experienced deep-sea divers searched the crevices in the rocks beneath the cliffs. All of the sea bordering the vicinity was gone over. There was no trace of a body. The shoreline on either side of the murder spot was checked. Still no trace of the missing girl. In the meantime, two additional teams of men were assigned to check out the friends of Lorraine Farrell. They carried pictures of Paul Marcus and attempted to dig out any information on the suspect and the missing girl. 6:42 p.m., Sunday. We called the main jail and asked that the suspect be brought to the city hall for additional questioning.
I had a reason to do what I did, a good reason. Now, you let me talk to the responsible people around here, and I'll have them tell you. I'm getting a little tired of being shoved around. You just bring in the boss and let me talk to him.
What day did you say that you left San Francisco?
September 1st.
I thought it was the 2nd.
The 1st.
You said you left in the afternoon, is that right?
In the morning, and you remember it. I don't know what all these questions are for. I told you I killed Lorraine. I walked in here and told you there's no reason for all this McGilla. Just no reason.
Where'd you hide the body?
I didn't hide it.
Well, and where is it?
I told you, I put her in the ocean.
We haven't been able to find her.
Well, then you're not looking good. I told you the truth all along the line. I've told you
the truth. You sure you didn't make a mistake about where all this happened?
Not a chance in the world. Right there by the parking place where the two trees are.
Well, maybe you just thought you left her there.
I know it.
Had you been drinking when you killed her?
No. We stopped and had a couple of beers on the way. Just a couple, not enough to get drunk.
But you did have something to drink.
Well, sure, but not enough to get drunk on.
How many beers you have?
Two, maybe three.
All right, which was it? Two or three.
Well, what difference does it make?
Were you drunk?
No.
How about the girl? Was she drunk?
No.
You sure about that?
Yes, yes, I'm sure. What are you trying to do? What difference does it make? Maybe we did have more than a couple, but what difference does it make?
I'm just trying to get things straight.
We want to be sure we got the right story.
Well, you have.
All right. How about a cigarette?
Yeah, thanks.
Frank?
Yeah, thanks. Here, I got a match.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't light his, too. That's bad.
What do you mean?
Three on a match. It's bad.
It is, huh?
Well, sure. You never do that. Here.
Thanks.
You got right home after you killed the Farrell girl, huh?
Yeah. I drove right down the highway and went home. Traffic was kind of heavy. I thought about it. All those people all hurrying around, not taking any time.
Anybody see you when you came home?
What do you mean?
Well, anybody see you park the car, go into your apartment?
Well, no. There wasn't anybody around.
Now, you said when you met the girl up in San Francisco that she had a suitcase with her, is that right?
Yeah, she did. Artificial leather with real leather binding.
And where is it now?
Huh?
What'd you do with her suitcase?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember it.
We couldn't find it in your room.
Well, you didn't have no right to go through my room. No right at all.
We didn't find a suitcase. Where is it?
Well, I don't know.
Did you put it with a body?
Well, I might have.
Where?
I don't know. I don't remember. I hit her. She lied to me and I hit her. And I pushed her into the ocean. That's all I know. And that's all I'm going to tell you.
Joe, see you a minute.
Yeah, sure. What do you got, Al?
We found the girl.
Where?
She's sitting in the squad room.
Frank stayed with the suspect in the interrogation room, and I went with Sergeant Al Olivas up to the office. Sitting at one of the tables was a small girl with jet black hair. As we came into the room, she was putting on lipstick. She glanced over at us, and then she went back to what she was doing. There wasn't any doubt about it. The girl in the squad room was Lorraine Farrell. She dyed her hair, and she had on a lot of makeup, but it was the missing girl.
Joe, this is Miss Farrell, Joe Friday.
How do you do?
Hi.
Where'd you find her, Al?
Friend up in Eagle Rock. Says she's been there for a week.
Thanks, Al.
Right.
You seen the papers lately, Miss Farrell?
Yeah, I read the funny.
You ought to read the front page. You've been on them.
All right.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of policemen out looking for you.
They probably needed the exercise anyway.
There's a man down the hall who thinks that he killed you.
That creep, Paul?
Yeah, Paul Marcus, that's his name.
Real creep. I was glad to get away from him. Well, I guess he tried to give me about our home. What a baloney. He's a real creep. You ought to keep an eye on him. He's going to wig one of these days.
Is that so?
Yeah. He drove me down here, and when I told him I didn't want to have anything to do with him, he got real sore, started yelling. Creep.
Where'd all this happen, miss?
Oh, out by Malibu. Road out there. Stopped the car and gave me all the stuff about wanting to marry me. I was in love with me. Big deal. Said I was the first girl I ever said that to. Big deal.
What happened then?
I told him I didn't want no part of him. Told him to get lost. Thanked him for the ride and told him to get lost. He flipped. Fatty flip. I took off, got a ride, came into the town. I got this girlfriend, Eagle Rock. I've been out there. You ought to watch that guy, though.
Mm-hmm. How old did you tell him that you were?
I don't know. Forget. I think 19, something like that. Forget.
Mm-hmm.
He confessed to killing me, huh?
That's right.
Flip, he's a Whig.
Let's take a walk, huh?
Where?
Come on.
Sure, I got nothing to lose. Can you guys drive me back to Eagle Rock tonight? I got a date. I got to be back pretty quick.
You're not going to go back to Eagle Rock.
Who says so?
We're going to have to hold you.
For what? I haven't done anything.
Well, you're a minor. We've got a missing report filed on you. Your folks are pretty worried.
They're always worrying about something. There ain't nothing for them to worry about, then they worry about that.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. We're going to have to hold you.
You just try it, cop. You just try it. You'll find out you got more trouble than you came in one lump.
Uh-huh. In here. This is Lorraine Farrell, Officer Smith.
Hello. Lorraine.
Hi, creep.
I didn't mean to do it. You know that. I didn't really mean to do it, but there wasn't any other way.
What's plan? You know what he's talking about?
He thinks he killed you.
Wait.
I didn't think I'd ever see you again. I didn't think I would. But I want you to know one thing, Lorraine.
What's that?
I forgive you for lying.
I told you it happened.
Yeah, come on.
Where to?
We'll take you to the office and call a policewoman.
Then to the can, huh?
The juvenile hall. Come on, let's go.
I'll take her, Joe.
Right.
Bye, Paul.
Bye, Lorraine. I'm not mad at you anymore.
You know, I was worried.
Sergeant?
Yeah?
I want you to know how I appreciate it.
Yeah, what's that?
What you tried to do, I think was real fine, thanks.
I don't know what you mean.
You didn't fool me a bit.
What?
I know I killed her.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On October 4th, a hearing was held in Department 98, Superior Court, State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that hearing.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Earlier, George Fenneman told you exactly why the Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made, and best for you. Now, the rest is up to you. Get a carton or two for yourself. Smoke them, and you'll say, as we do, it's Chesterfield's for me.
Paul Nelson Marcus was held to answer a charge of violation of Section 701 WIC, contributing to the delinquency of a minor. After due deliberation, he was placed on probation and delivered into the hands of a competent psychiatrist. Lorraine Jean Farrell was returned to the custody of her parents. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Herb Ellis. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Filter tip smokers, this is it. L and M filters. The one filter tip cigarette with plenty of good taste. Much more flavor, much less nicotine, and effective filtration. Only L&M filters have the miracle filter tip containing alpha cellulose, the purest material for filtering cigarette smoke. Yes, this is it. As Bennett Cerf puts it, L&M filters are just what the doctor ordered. Buy L&M filters, the distinctive monogram cigarette. L&M filters, America's highest quality and best filter tip cigarette.
Hear Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune following John Cameron Swayze and the news on the NBC Radio Network.
That's going to do it for this episode of Case Closed, but you can find a lot more from Sherlock Holmes and Dragnet
all the past episodes of this podcast and the other podcasts at relicradio.com. You'll also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.